radio about all things all genders. This is Intravenous, live on CJSF 90.1 FM, discussing and approaching contemporary gender issues through a feminist lens. Our goal is to educate, engage, and challenge the dominant hegemony.
Hello, 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 and good morning, and welcome to Intravenous on CJSF 90.1 FM. You're listening to Campus and Community Radio, broadcasting from Burnaby on the unceded Coast Salish territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, and Kwikwetlem Nations. I'm your host, Nicole, and I hope that the sunshine has brought in some joy and brightness to your morning. It is always so good to make it up to the mountain when the weather is looking great and the sunshine is just beaming. So I am so thrilled about that. On today's show, I have a few interviews to share. But before I get into that, I have an update about a story that I shared last month. In April, I had a conversation with William Gladman, an ITC union representative, who is also an advocate helping to get the Michael J. Fox Theater more years of life. The theater was scheduled to be closed to community bookings at the end of June. However, last week, the Save the Michael J. Fox Theater campaign shared that the city of Burnaby had approved a one-time grant up to $300,000 to the school district to support the operating costs of the theater. This meant that the theater would remain open for public and community bookings until at least the end of 2027. However, things have actually seemed to change overnight, because yesterday I'm signed up for their emails, and yesterday I received an email from the campaign stating that unfortunately the Burnaby School District has actually declined the grant, and it says that it will continue with plans to close the theater this June. The city and the community are ready to work together. However, it looks like support is still needed from the Burnaby School District. So there are still ways to show your support. And in the show notes today, I will definitely be including a link where you can basically send an email to decision makers to show your support. I will also include information about the Save the Michael J. Fox campaign, so I'll include their website URL so that you can get connected as well. And please save the date for the next Burnaby School District meeting, which is on Tuesday, May 26th. So that is next Tuesday. Community members are encouraged to attend to show the trustees how important it is to keep the Michael J. Fox Theater open to the public. So I am hoping that they can, you know, stay open at least for another 2 years, if not indefinitely. Another thing that I want to share before I get into some interviews is the fact that there is an event today happening. It is presented by SFU Food, and that is happening today, Wednesday, May 20th, until 2 p.m. You will be able to support a local business by visiting the SFU Dining Commons and sampling a special menu featuring products from Dell's Gourmet, which is a Vancouver-based food and beverage business specializing in West African cuisine. Since 2019, Dell's Gourmet has been serving fresh West African dishes made with local ingredients, exotic spices, and bold flavors. So some of the menu highlights are Jollof rice and chicken, delish. Egusi stew, chili chicken stir fry with seafood chili sauce. A spicy TVP pizza with vegan chili sauce. And Dorawat tater tots. So, if you're wondering, like, what would be the fee is the regular dining common door rates would apply. So, again, if you are on campus and want to get some delicious West African dishes, you can head over to the SFU Dining Commons until 2 p.m. today. Now I am going to share our first interview for the show. This is by SFU student volunteer Hazel Hoffman Miller, who had a conversation with Raven Grenier, who is the artistic and administrative assistant with Dancers of Domlahamid, and they talked about the Coastal Dance Festival that actually took place early in March of this year. I was very lucky to have the opportunity to see this performance at the Anvil Center. So here is a conversation. Let's take a listen.
The Dancers of Domlahamid is an indigenous dance company that performed at the Coastal Dance Festival in early May. Here's a conversation with Raven Grenier. Thank you so much for joining me.
Of course.
Yeah, do you want to just start by introducing yourself, talking a little bit about what is the Dancers of Domlahamid?
So my name is Raven Grenier. I'm a Gixam Shkegwak and mixed settler artist working in a couple different mediums, mostly in dance and fine arts, and also through song through Dancers of Domlahamid. And we have been hosting a festival since I was quite young, since 2008. I believe we've been doing this for around 20 years. Yeah, we've been working consistently with the Museum of Anthropology. That's where we started the festival again since it moved back down to Vancouver. And it moved back down to Vancouver under the leadership of my parents. And previously to that, it was under the leadership of my grandparents, Ken and Margaret Harris. We founded the festival in Lahaine, Prince Rupert, in 1967. It's been a while since we've been at the museum. We've been away from the museum for the past 5 to 7 years because of renovations. We're really happy to be back. Last year, I did share my piece that I've been working on at the festival, but this year, I'll be taking a break from that part of it and doing more of the hosting and the putting the festival on with my family. And I will be sharing my work the following year at the festival again. So I've been working on my own personal work, which is premiering at the Kulch in their season coming up in 2027-2028. So my first major show for that was at the festival last year, and it's been a year since I've been doing my own work outside in the community.
What are some things that you've been doing for dance, within the community?
I have been mostly working with creating my production, so I'm in the creation process right now. I'm still in the grant writing process and getting to the full length production and multimedia production ready to premiere in a couple years. So it's been nice to show excerpts at the festival and at other performances. We had a performance at Vines Festival in their summer program, and then we just performed at Transform Festival, which was a bigger one for us. That was at the Vancouver Playhouse, and that was for Corey Payette's or Urban Inc.'s Transform Festival. And I think we're going to try to take a break from showing the work for public until the premieres happened. So I'm mostly working on the dance creation residencies and working on the soundtrack too. I'm creating my own EP.
What is the process to creating a dance?
I tend to start from story. Mm-hmm. I tend to work with oral histories, but also work with ways to have them present in a contemporary context that doesn't give away the meaning to the whole audience. And it keeps some of the meetings, the word I've been using is like codified for those within a community that like the story belongs to. So I've been working with kind of just keeping that knowledge very kept in high regard and respected and shared in its full capacity only in a certain setting.
If other people are like interested in sort of doing what you do, like what advice would you offer?
If they're also an Indigenous artist, I think that my advice is to honor their current connections and their relationships that are pre-existing. Mm-hmm. If they're not an Indigenous artist, I would examine for them to just take a minute to understand the relationship to the land that they currently on. What city are they in? Whose traditional territory is that? What is their role as a settler? And what is their role as a Canadian? Mm-hmm. What does that mean in the grander context? But I think for other aspiring Indigenous artists, I think that, just follow what is in place with at home. Like, what are the ways you can reconnect to land and reconnect to yourself and to your language from your own territory?
For you, what's it like being an artist like in Vancouver?
It's definitely very there's a lot of different opportunities that come in. It's kind of one of the major arts hubs in Western Canada, so there's a lot of different work opportunities that I've been exposed to through different you know, I started off making dance films, and I've also grown up with the festival and with Dances of Dawn Muhammad, but in terms of my own work, I've found that making friendships is the best way to kind of, like, form those relationships to collaborate on multiple mediums and multiple disciplines, and I've definitely found the most meaningful work happens in collaboration with other Indigenous artists. And I think that the most meaningful collaborations are also when possible, if they're from also a Northern community, because they'll understand my particular art form on a different level. So I think for me, it's been finding like the people that are from that area, that I can make friends with and kind of pursue those collaborations and relationships and everything. But also just meeting different international Indigenous folks in Vancouver has been really cool.
So what was it like for you, like growing up with the dancers of Dawn Muhammad?
It was definitely just part of my everyday life. I think that we did a lot of work to maintain the songs in the time that it was, and that means that when my grandparents were working with the songs and the dances, they were working with it in a more rural context, and in our time we're working in a, you know, in the generation we're in an urban context, so it's been very different. I grew up learning English as my first language, which was not the case for my grandparents, and I learned a very positive outlook on the culture, and a very strong sense of confidence and well-being from the practices. So I think that that was something unique to my time in history.
What do you want more people to know about dance and the stories that you tell like through dance?
I think that I want more people to understand just the positionality they have to Indigenous dance. I think that there's a lot of people who might mean well in certain regards, but the reality is that there's a lack of prioritization around, you know, Indigenous dance in our country. Until quite recently have we seen these art forms being performed in large scale, like contemporary works alongside other Western dance forms. And it's often been indigenous artists leading the charge for indigenous dance, like following the lifting of the potlatch ban, which was lifted in the 1950s, we spent several decades to really revitalize song and dance. And I was part of that generation where I grew up, like, knowing all of the songs and dances. And it was about 50 years ago that they had to borrow items from museums to dress up in their regalia. And I think that Indigenous dance should be a very big priority for anyone living on Indigenous land. I think that that's something that needs to be part of the core of what is our art scene if we're going to live on unceded Indigenous land. And yeah, I think with everything going on in the world right now, I think that we're in a place where we need a lot of, like, gentle care and allyship and connections.
Right. So what are the dances that are going to be at the Coastal Dance Festival?
Mostly we try to prioritize having a good representation of local Indigenous groups, so like Salish groups, and also just really representing all of the different nations from around where we're from, like the Northern Nations and Haida and Tlingit and Kwakwaka'wakw as well from the islands. And so there's a lot of different, you know, like one dance group might highlight a particular style a bit more than other dance groups might. But there's a lot of mass dancing. There's a lot of just different international Indigenous types of dance. And for our dance group in particular, we're going to be sharing the first time we'll be performing. It's called the Goat Transformation Song. And that's a song that I recently composed, and it was shared for the first time at Jacob's Pillow, and then shared at the reopening of MOA, I believe it was last summer. And it's been since then that we've only performed it a couple times, so we're excited to bring it back to MOA. And I believe it was the last festival that we've performed the goat in an actual performance setting, so it'll be nice to do it again this year.
How can people like connect with you online? Like, do you have like a website people like want to learn more or see kind of what are the upcoming projects for you?
Sure. We have an Instagram page. It's called Dancers of Down the Hamid. And it's the same as our just company name, and it's also where you can find our website, www.damlahamid.ca. And in terms of me personally, if they're curious, I'm on Instagram as Raven Grenier. We have some of our other artists that are on Instagram as well. You'll find, if you're interested in connecting with the festival community, just look at the festival following, and yeah, there's a lot of, that's a great way to connect. There's also Facebook is a really big thing for Indigenous people. There's our Facebook page, and we have, it's through the Dancers of Down the Hamid Facebook page. We have a separate festival page that we reshare all of those posts.
Thank you so much, Raven, for coming in for the interview today.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
The annual Sled Island Music and Arts Festival is back June 17th to 21st, presented by Service Credit Union. Experience 5 days of music, comedy, art, and much more in diverse venues across Calgary, Alberta. Joining Sled Island's previously announced guest curator, Clipping, is English chamber folk ensemble Black Country New Road, revered Canadian pop project Homeshake, renowned abstract rapper Billy Woods, LA synth punks Sextile, fuzzy indie rock outfit Feeble Little Horse, outlandish egg punk group Snooper, lo-fi post-punk duo Sweeping Promises, New York City-based ambient pioneer Laraji, genre-bending dream pop artists Salami Rose, Joe Lewis, and many more. Plus, there are over 150 more artists still to be announced. Check out the current lineup and get your passes and tickets at sledisland.com.
Setting things up.
Studio 6, CGSS Video Series, captures high-quality video recordings of live performances and interviews with impactful and inspiring artists.
So, did you know that in last month you were the top of the electronics chart?
I did, and I was so pumped. It was amazing. Yeah.
As well as engaging conversations with community members about the issues that are most important to their communities.
I find, like, you know, if I'm coming from a place of my own experience, then I can just expand upon it and be like, so this happened to me, and like, why? And how does that affect me? And how does it affect other people who are going through the same thing? And
watch all of the Studio 6 live sessions on CJSF's YouTube page or on our website at cjsf.ca/studio6.
Welcome back to Intravenous. You've been tuned into CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby, broadcasting from the unceded Coast Salish territories. Next up, I have another interview that I would like to share. This is an interview that I actually pre-recorded yesterday with a psychedelic jazz band based out of Montreal, and they are called the Plastic Waste Band. So we're going to take a listen to our conversation, and then shortly after that, we will take a listen to one of my fave tracks off of their latest album. Let's take a listen.
This is Nicole Hines with CJSF 90.1 FM, and I am here with psychedelic jazz band, the Plastic Waste Band. I am joined by 3 out of 5 band members today. I've got Ethan, John, and Claire with me. So thank you so much for joining me today. Hi, everyone. How is everyone doing?
Good.
Really good.
Yeah. Great.
Awesome. And you guys, just for listeners right now, we are recording this remotely. So I am curious, you guys are out in Montreal right now?
Yeah, we are all convened in Montreal. Awesome. Just had a rehearsal.
Yay. Awesome. And what is the weather like out there today?
Hot and beautiful. Yeah.
Okay, hot and beautiful. I love it. It is also it's also gorgeous out here in the Lower Mainland. So I love that we are vibing on the same weather patterns today. Okay, so I definitely want to talk about your most latest album that recently came out. But before we get into that, I'm not even going to get into the title of the album. Well, it's Trash Island, guys. But I do want to talk a bit about the band. I want to kind of like introduce you to listeners here. And if you wouldn't mind sharing, whoever would like to start, how did everyone in the band meet? How did you guys form?
Most of us met at McGill University where we studied. So it has changed personnel over the years. But when we first started, this is Ethan talking, by the way, started the band as just a project of my original compositions, and I'd try stuff with them, and we would book shows, and it was very much under my direction. And at that time, we had, I think the first show was 2 saxophones, piano, bass, drums, guitar. Mm-hmm. And over time, it shifted, and now we have 2 guitars, 1 tenor sax, bass, and drums. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it really has become more of a collective project. The 3 of us are the ones who write the music, which is a big reason why it's the 3 of us today with you today.
Awesome. And yeah. Okay, so my next question then is, how did you, like, where did the name The Plastic Waste Band come from?
It is sort of a play on words with the Plastic Ono Band.
Okay.
And also an elastic waistband.
Oh.
And also the fact that the band began as sort of an environmental like an eco-activist jazz, hey, remember that we may be playing music, but also the world is melting down before our eyes. What are we going to do about it? Because at the time, I think many of us were, I noticed in myself and in many others around me that there was sort of this question of like, why am I doing art when there are huge problems to solve in mm-hmm. this world? And it's a big question for artists because it's just like, what am I going to do? Like go into the practice room and practice my instrument? Like, shouldn't I be out there fighting the, you know, the people trying to keep on drilling, you know, keep on building those pipelines, keep on, you know, making the plastic bottles and all of that. And it's a very complicated question. And I found like, if that's important to me, I may as well work that into my work.
Yes, absolutely.
Anytime soon.
I love to hear that. Now I want to shift into your sound, right? And if somebody hasn't listened to you before, how would you describe your sound?
Oof. I would describe it as it's, well, we're improvisers.
Okay.
So that's where we're coming from in terms of our a common listening, I guess,
yes.
in terms of music we've listened to. And we're bringing that into a sonic world that is really influenced by like by prog music,
mm-hmm.
psychedelic rock bands, like, you know, like Jimi Hendrix or I know Ethan was the first one to show me King Crimson.
Okay.
And there's also, I would say, not to, I think reference points for bands are helpful, but there's also one of our first bands that we played in before this one at school was we took on the music of the Brian Blade Fellowship.
Okay.
And I think that there's like a penchant to be soulful and very melodic
yes.
in our music and to use a strong melody to guide us through group improvisations.
I love that. Now I want to get more into your third album, correct? Right? Like this is an album that just got released last week. It is called Trash Island. Can you share with the listeners what your like inspiration was for this album?
Musically or conceptually?
Why don't we do both? I like that. Let's go both.
John, do you want to start with the conceptual?
Yeah, yeah. Well, the idea is it's inspired in part by the Pacific Garbage Patch.
Okay.
You know, this giant island of trash in the ocean. And what if a catastrophic flood were to hit our planet as we know it now, and the only habitable physical surface above water was an island of trash, much like this Pacific garbage patch.
Mm-hmm.
And this patch would float around the world and encounter parts of the world that the former Earth that are at different levels of depth under the ocean. And so there's enough left in certain places to allow for humanity's continued sustenance.
Mm-hmm.
While being continually reminded of what we gave up through either forces out of our control mm-hmm. and the irony that the one thing that saved us is the thing that we are, the habits that we are now using to cause a great harm to the planet.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So there's a humor there. There's a bit of a dark, ironic humor that we use in our music to, as a coping mechanism, I would say, in terms of all of these, the sense of powerlessness that can come from the situation we're in.
And I, before Ethan, you answer, I just want to say that that's so needed. I mean, like we are, you know, especially in these times, I appreciate that thought, right? Like literally putting into that thought into the concept for this piece. So Ethan, if you want to talk a little bit about like musically, like what was the inspiration?
Right. I want to leave space for Claire too.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Musically, it's always shifting. It's always just what we are into as individuals.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we come together as a band, like, I don't know. The music part is easy, honestly, with this band, because it's like, how do we play? Oh, how are you guys playing? OK.